ஓம் பார்த்தாய பிரதிபோதிதாம் பகவதா நாராயணேன ஸ்வயம் வியாசேன க்ரதிதாம் புராண முனினாம் மத்யே மகாபாரதம் அத்வைதாம்ருதவர்ஷிணீம் பகவதீம் அஷ்டாதசாத்யாயினீம் அம்பத்வாம் அனுசந்ததாமி பகவத்கீதே பவத்வேஷிணீம். யம் ப்ரஹ்மா வருணேந்திர ருத்ரமருதஸ்துன்னந்தி திவ்யைஸ்தவைஹி வேதை சாங்கபதக்ரமோபநிஷதைஹ் காயந்தி யம் சாமகாஹ த்யானாவஸ்தித தத்கதேன மனசா பஸ்யந்தி யம் யோகினோ யஸ்யாந்தம் ந விதுஃ சுரா சுரகணாஹ தேவாய தஸ்மை நமஹ. We are continuing the discussion, the second chapter. In the last two verses, that is 62nd and 63rd, we found a graphic description of how our mind loses its inner peace and stability. In fact, the coming verses discuss, they focus on one very interesting topic, and that is very dear to all of us. It is called prasada or chitta prasada. The word prasada indicates a natural sense of inner stability, peace, calmness. When we feel that we have done something that we ought to have done, we have obtained something that we were looking for, we feel that there is nothing more to look for. Now, this is not possible by obtaining anything in this material world. If we go to old age homes, or if we discuss with doctors who are working in the medical institutions, those who deal with the hospice patients, and I have done it on a few occasions, and I've chance to visit some of these old age homes. Now, one thing that strikes you is a kind of inner bitterness. Not every one of them, but unfortunately a good number of people who live in the old age homes, you find a kind of inner bitterness. They are not angry with anyone. They are not... They don't have any ill feeling towards anything or anyone. But a very clear, a visible absence of the inner poise and contentment that actually enriches our life. The absence of this inner serenity and contentment is what strikes you. So, in the 62nd and 63rd verse, Lord Krishna gives a graphic description of how this inner peace is frequently lost. So the two verses are, Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangas teshu bhajayade sangha sanjayade kamaha kama krodho bhijayade krodhar bhavadi sammoha sammoha smriti vibhramaha Smriti Bhramshad Buddhi Nashu Buddhi Nashad Pranashyadi. Two verses. So Shankaracharya in his Viveka Chudamani gives a very graphic description of how we lose our mind. The Gita tells you this: when you go on thinking about external objects, then you feel a great attraction for all of them. We may know that those things are not good for us. We may feel an attraction for things that we know very clear would be harmful to us. Remember, attraction is not always towards things which are necessarily good for us. There is a kind of special attraction which I refer to this very interesting. Dostoevsky refers to in his Brothers Karamazov. Our impassioned, obsessive attraction for the indefensible, for something that is positively harmful to us. It's like a butterfly or some insects that fall into the fireball, you know, when there is a fire burning, the flame, the red color of the flame attracts these moths and some flies, and they go in thousands and perish. Now, like that, there is sometimes some sort of an attraction for things that we misinterpret to be good for us, and also an attraction for things that may be harmful to us, even as we know very well. So very often attraction is not always towards what we want. Attraction is frequently towards things which are visible everywhere. So this is an important point, remember. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha. Dhyayato means the one who meditates, who thinks of sense objects all the time. The one who doesn't have any higher spiritual ideal to guide him, to guide her, will have the mind always scattered, wandering about, and suddenly if there is something which is attractive, the mind goes towards that. Whatever is available towards, whatever is available around us, mind goes after that. And then mind naturally develops a desire. Desire not only for things which are good, but desire even for things which are bad, obviously. We may know it may be harmful, still the mind goes after that. See, when the mind always went after things which are good for us, at least to our understanding, the problem will be much lesser. The mind goes after things which we know to be perfectly harmful to us. That's a much bigger problem. And then we direct all our efforts, mental energy, physical energy, intellectual energy, all our efforts are directed towards obtaining that desired object. And we, of course, naturally, we do not always succeed in getting things that we work for. There'll be disappointment, which is inevitable. And when this disappointment comes, we become bitter. And this bitterness actually turns the mind upside down. The mental balance is lost. And then what happens? We become angry with ourselves and angry with everyone. And slowly there is a gradual degradation of the mind. Krodhat bhavati sammoha. Sammoha is a peculiar state of mind where we are deluded. Our sense of direction is lost. Even the most eloquent speaker cannot convince a person who is deluded as to what he is good for, him or her. Impossible. Scriptures cannot teach. So this sammoha is a state where mind gets completely deluded. It interprets the right for the wrong and the wrong for the right. And buddhinashat pranasyati. So krodha bhavati sammoha, sammoha smriti vibhramaha, smriti bhramshat buddhinashu, and then whole mental system gets completely upset. Now, here the beginning of this problem could be a natural attraction for something that we may not need, still the mind goes after that. Once the mind gets attached to it, then it's like a ball that falls down the ladder. It never stops till the ball reaches the rock bottom. Shankaracharya is credited with this great graphic description of comparing the mind to a ball that is thrown from the top of the ladder. So in the Viveka Chudamani, he says, very interesting, just refer this, you know. Tato moha tatoham dhihi tato bandhas tato vyatha lakshichudam che yadi chittamishad bahirmukham sannibet tatastataka. So when the goal is lost, when we don't have a higher ideal to direct our mind and senses, it is called lakshichudi, means sense of purpose is absent. So when we don't have a sense of purpose in our life, when we don't have a mechanism by which we can direct our mind and senses towards one creative, constructive goal, what happens? It's called in Sanskrit lakshachyuti. Lakshachyuti means the goal is lost. The ideal is not visible. So mind gets scattered. All the five senses of perception drag the mind towards their own respective objects. The sense of sight, sense of hearing, sense of touch, sense of smell, and sense of taste, all these five senses simultaneously distract the mind towards these multiple objects. Then what happens? See, pramadado prachyuda kelikantukaha sopanapangto padido yathadatha. Sopanapangti means a set of steps in the ladder. So the ball is thrown from the top of the ladder, then stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, eventually reaches the last step and then hits the bottom. That's what really happens to human mind. So that's why ithapakrishtam shaivalam kshanamatram natishthadi avrinodi tathamaya prakyam vapi paramukham. One important point is, it's very interesting, kshanamatram natishthadi, you know. This ball doesn't stop on one step of the ladder. That's the main problem. See, you cannot control it. The ball is thrown from the top of the ladder and then it starts falling one step behind the other and there is no way to stop it. So once the mind is distracted towards various sense objects, which we know to be absolutely of no use to us, with no significance, could be positively harmful to us, still the mind goes after those things, because the mind is not directed towards something higher. When the mind is directed towards something higher, it doesn't get distracted. Even if it gets distracted, mind could be brought back to the central goal. That's why great scientists, great musicians, great artists, great poets, they are in many ways, they are blessed people because they are able to direct their intellectual energy, physical energy, mental energy, and eventually spiritual energy to something creative, productive and constructive. So there may be dissipation of energies, but then that will be limited because that can be restrained and because the energies can always be directed towards something higher, something which is productive, which is constructive. And as a result, you get an Einstein, a Newton, or maybe Beethoven. You make great artists, musicians, thinkers, and so on. Why? Constructive, creative utilization of human energy resources. Because it has not been distracted. Otherwise, what happens if we allow our mind to go after the senses, the senses will be very bad friends, very bad servants. They will drag the mind to innumerable sense objects. And as a result, nothing will be achieved. Now, in the 64th verse, Lord Krishna is giving a very interesting description of two important spiritual values, Shama and Dama. We will come to that. Ragadveshavayuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran atmavasyer vitheyatma prasadam adhigachati. So prasada is the word used. Prasadaha. Prasada is actually chitta prasada. What if, well, if you want a real explanation, description of prasada, Shankaracharya says, ayatna lalita vishesh. Ayatna lalita means, see, without any effort on your part. An effortless, spontaneous, natural state of being established in serene peace, inner peace and self-fulfillment. That state of mind is called prasada. So, if a spiritual seeker is able to restrain the senses And if he's able to prevent the senses and mind from moving among different objects and senses, what happens? Then he'll be free from raga and dvesha, attraction and aversion. Extreme attraction, extreme liking, extreme obsessive fascination, infatuation, certain things, is one side of the coin. The other side is extreme aversion. You cannot have a coin with only one side. Any person who has an obsessive liking for certain things will have a hidden obsessive hatred towards something else. Now, it doesn't mean that liking, regard, or love, or compassion will always have a counterpart. Not at all. What it means is, when it becomes obsessive liking, it is only an expression of obsessive hatred. But remember, there one thing is, Lord Krishna is mentioning here our natural fascination towards certain things which are essentially harmful, which are essentially negative, which actually bring our downfall and which creates problem for others. So that's why Raga Dvesha Vyukta is to Vishayan Indriyaischaran. So a person who has controlled his senses and mind is able to be free himself from extreme attraction, raga. Extreme attraction here means a kind of mental obsession or infatuation which spiritually and psychologically enslaves us. That is called raga. It is not attraction of a musician for music or attraction of an artist for painting, not at all. What it means is a kind of obsessive infatuation towards certain things which actually enslaves the person. Some of the great ultra-nationalists who have become scourges of humanity, maybe Mussolini or Hitler, you can find many such examples. Patriotism is good. Loving one's own country is good. Great efforts to raise one's own nation is good. But if it becomes a kind of extreme attraction, obsession, it cannot exist without some kind of extreme aversion, hatred. So the only way to avoid extreme hatred is to avoid extreme infatuation. If you want to avoid one side of the coin, then you better avoid the other side also, which means better get rid of the coin, both together. Which means you should transcend both. Going beyond both. Now, sometimes this in practical life, whenever our mind gets obsessed with extreme hatred towards a person, towards something, then we must learn to love what we dislike. So, we must try to learn to love and live with, coexist with what we dislike. So, and then what happens? We are able to look the unpleasant and the pleasant, pain and pleasure, what is extremely attractive and what is extremely repulsive, with the same even-mindedness. And again, the advantage is, if you are not attracted towards something with the great obsession, there will be no chance of our ever being full of hatred, being hostile towards anything. So the only way to avoid unhappiness is to stop always looking for happiness. The only way to avoid hostility towards somebody else is not to be obsessively attracted towards something to the point of becoming spiritually and psychologically enslaved by that infatuation. That's what it means. It's not. Doesn't mean a mother's love for the children, or the parents' love for the children. Nothing of that kind. That's not what is meant here. It is some kind of extreme, abnormal infatuation towards certain things, which we know to be spiritually harmful to us. So the only way to avoid this is to have aversion towards none and to have obsessive liking for no one. That's the idea behind. So these two disciplines are actually called Shama and Dhamma. So now, these are two important disciplines in Vedanta, not only in Vedanta, but all spiritual seekers need this. It's called, you know, Samadhi Sarka Sampate, Samadhama Uparaditi Diksha Siddha Samadhanam. I shall explain this later when the discussion, when the subject comes. But two of these disciplines are mentioned here. One is Shama. Shama is nothing but a kind of renunciation, dispassion towards extreme enjoyment, towards extreme infatuation, so that we will not have extreme hostility or aversion towards something. So Shankaracharya defines Virajya Vishayavrada Dosha Drishtya Muhurmuhu Sulakshya Niyatavastha Manasya Shama Uchyate. So the great teacher Shankaracharya, who actually we should thank him because we are reading Gita today. This book we won't be reading today if Shankaracharya had not written a commentary on this. Because this book of 700 verses is a tiny fragment of a much bigger book called Mahabharata, which has got more than 100,000 verses, considered to be the biggest book in the world. In its larger version, it has got 145,000 verses. You can imagine the size of the book. 145,000 verses, considered to be more than 13 times the size of Homer's Iliad and Odyssey and Virgil's Aeneid combined together. More than 13 times the greatest, the size of the greatest Latin and Greek classics put together. This is the size of the book. Of that 145,000 verses, this Gita contains 700 verses. And because Shankaracharya, by his masterly touch in 8th century, wrote a commentary on these verses, we are reading it today. There are 18 Gitas, 18 texts in Sanskrit literature, of which Gita is one of the 18. And because the great Acharya, the great teacher, Shankara, wrote a commentary, it became a world spiritual classic. So the earliest commentary available is from 8th century. The same Shankaracharya wrote another book. He wrote many other books. One of the Prakarana Grantha introductory texts in Vedanta. It is called Viveka Chudamani. There he defines this quality. What is the quality? Dosha Drishtya Muhur Muhu. So whenever our eyes go after some pleasant objects, visible objects, whenever the eyes suddenly get trapped or entangled into something which can create problems for us, then what we should do? We should remind ourselves, we should tell ourselves, this is not good for us. So dosha drishtya muhur muhu means we should remind ourselves of how harmful it is to get trapped, to get infatuated by these sense objects. It doesn't mean that we should run away from the sense objects. Not at all. Vedanta doesn't tell you to run away from the world. Vedanta only tells you to understand the world in a more intelligent manner and live here. That is the unique message of Vedanta. Vedanta never tells us that the world is bad, the world you should run away from the world. It doesn't present before us a philosophy of negativity. It only tells us that we should face the world like an adult, a grown-up person. That's what Vedanta tells us. So, whenever the five senses, either the sense of sight, the eyes, the sense of hearing, the ears, with the sense of taste, the sense of smell and the sense of touch. These are the five senses of perception. Whenever they get trapped into something which may create a wrong impression, vasana or vritti, or a memory in our mental system, which can later be a problem, source of problem, then we should remind ourselves, we should tell ourselves, this is not good. So, muhur muhu, dosa drishtiya, we should be aware of the problem involved in being trapped by divisible objects, etc. This is called shama. So, it is kind of developing a kind of sense of dispassion towards things which can be harmful to us. And then later, live in the world. So once we live in the world with this, equipped with this spiritual mechanism, a kind of spiritual common sense, so to speak, then there is no problem. Not only that, we can live more intelligently, more effectively, the life and the world will be much more pleasant. The second discipline that is mentioned, that is involved in this, is dhamma. Dhamma actually means restraining the senses. The shama means a kind of dispassion towards sensory objects. Dhamma means restraining the senses. Indriya jaya. I mean, vishyebhi paravritya sthavanam sasya golagi ubhayesham indriyanam sadhamma parigirtitaka. The question arises, how do we live in the world? We cannot walk with eyes closed or ears closed, and we cannot live in the world without making use of the senses of touch, smell, and taste, and sight, and hearing. This totally, we cannot avoid it. Totally unavoidable. So what should be done is, whenever a visible object, for example, tries to turn the mind away from its balance, then we should not allow that visible object to enter our mental system and create a strong impression in the mind. We can live in the world without being enslaved by the world. Without living in the world, we can live in the world. You need not be of the world, still we can live in the world. We need not belong to the world, we can live in the world. That's the idea behind. So whenever the senses connect with sense objects and mind is dragged towards those sense objects, what happens is we should try to apply this principle of self-restraint mentally. These things are not good for us. The moment we tell these things are not always good, the moment we remember that idea, immediately the visible objects we may be seeing, but they do not leave a permanent impression on the mind. That impression, even if an impression is registered, it will be very, very shallow, very weak. It will not have a devastating effect. On the other hand, if we identify with everything we see, everything we hear, everything we experience, there is no peace. Because every moment, every second, mind is being dragged into all these objects. There's no way. I already discussed this earlier. Well, that's why mind is very important, not only the body. Well, I can give one example if you go to India, you can find people take bath in the Ganga, which is unfortunately one of the most polluted rivers in the world. They call it Holy Ganga, but now things have improved. Of course, right now Ganga is being purified. The situation is far better right now. Now, if you ask an Orthodox person, a person who believes that Ganga is holy, traditionally according to mythological belief, Ganga actually flows from the top of the Himalaya, the seat of Shiva, Vishnu, all the Hindu deities. So they associate this river with something that is sacred, which is holy, you may consider it's a belief. Call it a superstition if you want, because if you drink, you take a glass of Ganga water, you find a lot of bacteria in it, and germs in it. So people, if you tell them it's a holy water, you may not agree. But suppose a person who walks some hundreds of miles to reach the river Ganga and takes a dip there, that person, something happens to his mind. The sense of sanctity and sacredness and holiness that will attach the river, the water, will have a transforming effect on his mind. If you don't believe in it, then we will see only as a river where you can take bath or take, you can swim. And then we will see only, oxygen and hydrogen combination, nothing more. The moment you associate the river with something sacred and sanctified, that moment, the river, touching the river, taking the bath, and you feel peace of mind. Oh, I have done something which is holy. The moment we sincerely believe that this is something very holy, mind undergoes a change. Our metabolism, our mental system, our vasanas and vrittis react differently. On the other hand, if you go for hygiene, then you won't take a bath in Ganga water right now. But if you look for spiritual holiness, then a few drops of water, we use Ganga water for worship purposes. And it is believed that the water remains intact. It is a fact. It is being tested laboratorily. That's a different subject. What I want to drive home is the idea is, it is our mind that plays an important role. It's the mind that interprets things. So even if you look at things, and if you don't really look upon them as very important, if you don't allow the visible impressions to register themselves in the mental system, then we can live in the world, we can remain unaffected by the worldly things. That's the important discipline here. That's why prasadam adhigacchati. Atmavasya vidhiyatma prasadam adhigacchati. Prasada, I mentioned, inner tranquility, peace and contentment. Every person who is taking drugs, a billionaire who is taking drugs for getting 4 hours sleep, is doing that because he does not have this prasada, tranquility. So it shows how important it is. If a person becomes an addict, it's because his mind is looking for something which is not available. He may know that drugs cannot give prasada, but he can, for some time, postpone the torments of the mind, the problems of the mind. So it is this prasada that is very important. So our traditional scriptures have given a very interesting method. Have analyzed, described a very interesting method of achieving this prasada, especially in our everyday life situations. So there is one sutra in the Yoga Sutra, Maitri Karuna Mudita Upekshanam Sukadukha Punya Punya Vishayanam Bhavanataka Chitta Prasada. So how to obtain peace of mind? How to remain in peace with our own mind? How to remain in peace with our own mind? How to befriend our mind? How to prevent our mind from becoming our own enemy? So, 4 disciplines are mentioned here to attain this prasada, which is mentioned in the 64th verse. Atmavasya vidheyatma prasadam adhigacchati. That person attains tranquility. So, how do we interact with people? How do we associate with people? So, in normal life situations, we may come across people who are very much like us. And there are people who may be somewhat different from us, who may not be not as advanced in spiritual life as we ourselves. And there are those who are more advanced, and there are those who may not be interested in many of these spiritual ideas, who may look down upon these spiritual ideas. So we come across these 4 types of people. So Yoga Sutra classifies the type of people whom we may associate in our everyday life into 4 categories. Those who are like us and those who are still behind us, and those who are more advanced than us, and those who are totally negative in their attitude towards spiritual values. So four disciplines. One is Maitri, means a sense of friendliness with those who are spiritual seekers like ourselves, we should associate with. So mutual association will reinforce and enrich our own mind, our own convictions, our own ideas, our own practices. It will strengthen our conviction and our mind. If we discuss, if we associate with people who are more or less like us, spiritual seekers. And there are those who are not as advanced as most of us. We should not look down upon them. We should have a feeling of compassion, of friendliness with them. Then there are those who are more advanced than us. We should not be jealous of them. We should not have any envy for them. We should have admiration for others. If you can admire somebody for something great, that quality that you admire in him or in her will be yours tomorrow. What we admire in others, that we inherit actually. If we can admire goodness, great qualities, great achievements in other people, it's because we actually want those qualities within ourselves. So what we admire in others, that we inherit. And the fourth category is upeksha, means total indifference. There are people whose association can cast doubts in our mind on what we are doing, what we are practicing. It can shake our convictions. It can shake our faith. It can fill our mind with skepticism and doubt. That would be spiritually very devastating. We should keep a long distance from them. We should not befriend them, because any kind of association or contact will be harmful. We should not fight with them either. Does it mean that you can't expect the whole earth to be inhabited by 8 billion Jesus Christ and Buddhas? It is not possible. What it means is, in our mind, we should have a strong conviction, kind of what Vedanta calls an inner mental filtering mechanism, so that we'll be free from the negative effects of associating with people whose association can shake our own conviction, especially at the time when we are slowly evolving. Once we reach a very high level of spiritual progress, then our convictions cannot be shaken by anybody. But at the time of evolving, progressing, we should be careful to associate with people whose association will be helpful to us in our spiritual life. So that is the essence of the 64th verse. Then 65th verse is Prasade sarva dukkhanam hanihi asi upajayade prasanna chetasohi asu buddhi paryavadishthade. When we attain this tranquility, then all sorrow is gone. Now what it means is tranquility. Tranquility is, this prasada is defined in Vedanta scriptures and also in yoga tradition in two interesting words which are very comprehensive and very philosophical and very deeply psychological. One is kṛtārthada, that there is kṛta-kṛtyada. Kṛtārthada is a strange feeling of inner contentment that we experience when we obtain something. Yeah, that gives us a feeling of inner fulfillment. No worldly achievement can do that. That's an important thing. Nothing at the sensory level can ever give us this feeling of a deep sense of contentment or satisfaction. And maybe this is what explains I'm going to take examples from Christian mystical tradition because it may be closer to many of you. This is what explains the success of the great mystics. Can you ever imagine how a person like Saint Teresa of Avila or Saint John of Cross or Saint Joseph, I'm just giving some examples, How could they manage to face the torments and the tortures, the rejections and the problems they had to face from the hierarchy and still continue in their spiritual life? You should have something in your mind that helps you to sustain, to remain steady and strong, to face external threats and internal conflicts, jealousies, excommunications. This happened. You can find many such stories, many such examples from Hindu Buddhist traditions also. So what is the fuel? What is that which sustains, which helps us to go ahead and attain something great? Well, coming down to another level, not coming down, coming to another level. Let's say, take Abraham Lincoln, a man very close to your own history. This man was certainly not, he was not liked by many, and there were many people who had a slightly different view towards the problem that he wanted to solve. And so he had to fight a war. But he could withstand all these obstacles and difficulties and go ahead. What is that? But he may have thought and believed, this is something which I have to do. Now, by doing what he did, abolition of the slavery, he may not have achieved something may not have anything empirical, no worldly achievements or nothing. But this is something that he undertook upon himself. Or a man like Gandhi, another example. I'm not taking examples exclusively from the realm of mystics, because you may think there are very few mystics these days. But we can find this happening even among great politicians, great thinkers, great social reformers, great men and women who struggled for and attained great things because they believed in certain higher ideals. So that belief gave them the idea, well, I'm doing something which I ought to do. The krita krityata means an inner feeling or conviction, well, I have done what I ought to have done, what I should do. It has a spiritual content in it. Kṛtārtha means the same thing. I have attained something which I should attain. So it is this feeling of inner contentment that keeps the mind healthy and strong enough to withstand obstacles, problems and difficulties, and not only among the great mystics of all different traditions, but also of great men and women who undertook great things and attained great things in their life. So it is actually an aspect of this prasada. Chittasya prasada. Chitta means mental system. Prasada means the energy or the serenity, the peace and tranquility that you feel in your mind when you do something great and grand, and you feel there is no one else to praise you, but still in your own private world, we feel this is something that I should do, something we should attain. So that conviction gives a tremendous energy, and it enables a person to attain great things and withstand great obstacles and go ahead. So, and this, remember, one important quality of this prasada is, you know, prasade sarvadukhanam hanihi asya upajayate. So, all sorrows, all problems get destroyed when you get this prasada, this tranquility. So that means that prasada, that tranquility is not just mental peace. It goes much deeper, it is much more intense. So if you can get a little bit of that, that destroys all negativity. Because once a person obtains little bit of this prasada, his mind doesn't anymore look for pleasure all the time. He is no more obsessed with something he likes extremely. It goes beyond what he likes and it goes beyond what he dislikes also. It transcends both pain and pleasure. So the ragadvesha viyuktaistu visayanindriyaischaran. Earlier verse says, so prasade sarvadukhanam khani rasyopajayate. Sarvadukhanam khani means destruction of all sorrows. Now, in empirical life, you can never really attain this worldly life. Impossible. It's impossible. That be the richest man in the world is not the happiest. If the happiest man is in the, not really happy, in fact, you know, even the most successful person, the so-called happy person, will have some private problems. But those who attain this prasada, sarodukhanam hani means the destruction of the, eradication of all sorrows. All sorrows get destroyed when your mind goes beyond sorrow and also its opposite, enjoyment. When we stop looking for enjoyment, then only we go beyond sorrow. When we stop looking for happiness, then only we can avoid unhappiness. When we stop looking for pleasure, then only we can really avoid pain. So that's why it is said, you know, in the Gita elsewhere, Lord Krishna says, you know, sukham atyantikam yaddha buddhi grahyam atindriyam. So atyantikam sukham means ultimate, let us say, enjoyment. That is the adjective. Atyantikam means the ultimate. What is? It is not enjoyment of this world. It is not enjoyment that is available in this world. It is a kind of transcendental feeling of this tranquility of prasada that is mentioned here. Prasanna chedoso hi ashu buddhi paryavadishthate. And a person whose mind is prasanna, such a person, his intellect, his thinking, everything is established in a state of inherent stability. That is another characteristic of siddha prajna. So we will discuss this subject again in the next class. Now we can have interaction. If you don't have any questions, I shall continue the class. Okay, most welcome.
So you mentioned about sthita prajna. Yeah. Can you explain a little more about, is that a characteristic of the mind or is it the nature of certain people to be able to deal with things with equanimity, or what does that specifically mean?
Yeah. So sthita prajna means sthita prajna yasya saha. Bahuvrihi samasa means a person whose mental system is in a state of inherent stability and peace. Now, prajna stands for not only mind, and not only intellect, but also for the whole lot of emotions, feelings, attitudes, his approach to life, approach to everything. So the prajna, the sthita itself is inherent stability. Inherent stability. In every translation, they may not be able to give the full implication of the word sthita prajna yasya saha. Somebody who is prajna. Prajna is also interpreted as jnanam, knowledge, understanding, interpretation, and also the tools with which you interpret and understand things. So mind, attitude, emotions, feelings, intellect, all are included in the word prajna. And sthita, he means in a state of inherent stability. Inherent means when it, you know, inherent stability is different from stability. Naturally, it gets established in a state of equilibrium, peace, and stability. In fact, this prasada itself is just one aspect of that sthaprajna. In fact, from 55th to 72nd verse, 18 verses, this is a whole list of the characteristics of sthaprajna. But in fact, the description will continue. So even this prasada itself is so profound in its implication. A person who has got this prasada, his mind is naturally established. So that sthida here means when you reach a state where you don't feel the need to look for something more, something else. That kind of absolute contentment is not possible when we attain anything in this world. So it is a kind of transcendental equilibrium, peace and tranquility.
So if you see a lot of modern science, you know, focusing on things like mindfulness,
yeah,
which is, you know, from my understanding, like from John Kabat-Zinn and others, it is basically being in touch with the present and, you know, living your life in a way wherein you're mindful for what is going on around you. I was just curious, from the Vedanta or the Bhagavad Gita, yeah, are there similar concepts, or, you know, what is the thoughts around you know, that philosophy?
Yeah, you know, mindfulness is actually is a subject of a long discourse that Buddha gave to Ananda. It is called Sadyupatthana Sutta, meaning the Smadyupasthana Sutra, meaning the long Buddhist hymn, Buddha's discourse, which discusses the subject of the inherent stability and awareness and ability to look as a witness of the mind. That is the real, that is the Bible, that's the scriptural source of mindfulness. And Buddha's teachings mostly came from the Gita. So I discussed earlier, if you read Dhammapada, the 26th section is called Brahmana Varga. Buddha uses the word Brahmana. In Pali is called Brahmana instead of Siddha Prajna. So Buddha, interestingly, he uses the word the wise man or the illumined person in that sense. So practically all these characteristics are referred to by Buddha as the characteristics of a spiritually attained illumined person. So mindfulness is a natural characteristic of the practice. One mind, you are aware of it, but you are not involved. So you are able to be aware of everything as a witness, but you are a non-participating witness. You are a witness with full awareness, but you are not involved. So a non-participating witness. So that is the real text of this mindfulness. Now it is called the Smadyupasthana Sutra, means it's a long discourse by Buddha on keeping the mind in a state of perpetual stability and awareness, and at the same time witnessing, looking upon everything as a witness, not as a participant. That's idea. So yeah, any
Swamiji, this reminds me of a local philosopher by the name of Alan Watts. And he used to speak about the psychic compass. And I was thinking that in Vedanta, is there a magnetism, a certain, almost in the physics, where it attracts us, not so much like the moth to the flame to be destroyed, but rather to be attracted to the magnetism of spirituality to be enlightened?
You know, when our mind is ready, when our mind is on the same wavelength, we feel a natural connection with what we listen to, what we hear, really. So when our mind is on the same level, same frequency, because of our own spiritual practices in this life and previous life cycles, if you have evolved a strong spiritual culture, samskara we call it, then we will feel a natural connection with what we hear. We feel a natural affinity with what we listen to, what we hear, what we read. When we are not ready, our mind is not ready, then you feel a friction. But still, every practice of hearing and listening will be useful, because that will help us to evolve further from where we stand right now. So the attraction or magnetism, attraction in the superficial sense, it is only short-lived. It's a short-lived attraction for an idea. When we are actually ready, when our mind is more prepared, then it may not be a superficial attraction. It could go much deeper, really speaking, you know. So when Paul Brendan went to Thiruvannamalai and he met Ramana Maharshi, they were not very eager, I mean, because he was a foreigner and then his life was very difficult, you know, 50 degrees centigrade, very humid. But still, he felt a great affinity with the place, really speaking, you know. So because his mind was ready, he may have done a lot of spiritual practices in this life, previous life, to reach that level of fitness. So when he listened, when he heard, he never looked back. And then he traveled all over the country and met many other great spiritual teachers. I saw also come.
Is there a historical, spiritual home for humanity? With humanity and its sufferings, its restlessness, its searching, its failures, its successes, is there in the memory of our species a place that we're going back to or towards? Somewhere in the universe, somewhere within ourselves, somewhere in this cosmology that we all share, is there a home of peace, eternal peace?
Yeah, you know, if you, after how many times we have lived in this world, there could be many solar systems, there could be many other planets, we may have lived there, so we don't know, really speaking. So we can't say, but if you just make an analysis of the last few thousands of years of human civilization, you can see there are certain countries and places which produce a great number of spiritual teachers. An extraordinary number of great spiritual teachers. So sometimes if you read life of Max Muller, even Paul Brendan, and so I refer to many other great Europeans and Americans who went to Himalayas. Even now you find many bearded men with strange clothes wandering all over the Himalayas. What is so strange? What is so great about it? They can go to Rockies and Alps and... So what is there? Not a very pleasant place all the time. Streets are crowded, roads are narrow, and still they are happy, as if they are enjoying it. What mystery do you find it here? We don't know. Perhaps places and countries and civilizations where a large number of spiritual seekers and spiritual masters were born naturally accumulate a lot of spiritual energies. So that place becomes a source of inspiration. As you can, if you go to any great church, any great cathedral, or any synagogue, any temple or Buddhist place, you can find this. Sometime back today, a professor came from a university. He was telling that he went to Bodh Gaya, and he felt a great spiritual attraction for that place. So the physical place also accumulates spiritual energy. But we'll be able to be sensitive to that spiritual energy that is present only when our mind is ready for that. So there is a mutual concordance here, mutual connection. When our mind is ready, then only it's ready. For example, I read Thoreau's Walden long back as a student. But after coming here, it has opened new ideas to me, really speaking, you know. So as you evolve, you find more meaning in the great writings, literature, spiritual literature, and so on. So as we evolve, we are able to be more sensitive to the spiritual vibrations that places and civilizations must have accumulated. And when we, at that level, we don't see the boundaries of culture, nationality, or anything. Our mind doesn't recognize the boundary lines, dividing lines between cultures and nationalities. So that is a different realm, you know. Okay.
Pranam Swamiji, is this state of sthita prajna the same as jivan mukti?
Siddha Prajna is actually Jivan Mukta. You find there in the last. Esha Brahmi Sthiti Partha Nainam Prapi Vimukhati Sitvasya Mandakale Api Brahmanirvanam Ruchati. Such a Siddha Prajna, when at the last moment, he will become one with Brahman. Yeah. So he has already reached the highest point of realization, and after when he reaches the end of his life, Esha Brahmi Sthiti. So it is, this state is called Brahmi Sthiti, means a state of being established in Brahman. That's the last verse, 72nd verse of the second chapter. Such a person will, at the end of his life, will become one with the universal spiritual reality. So that's why I mentioned, even at the time of evolving, before reaching that goal, even when we are evolving, we still feel these boundary lines disappearing. We are connecting with something universal and transcendental. That's why I gave the example of Paul Brendon going all the way, 8,000 miles, and living in a very crowded, very hot and very humid place, and he was quite happy with that. So how do you explain? Because those limitations no more matter to them when we go beyond that. So thank you. So we'll conclude today's session next Friday. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.